for joining us. I'm Diane Rehm. Israel continues to fire on targets in Gaza, and an Israeli soldier is reported missing. Diplomatic efforts to broker a ceasefire between Israel and Hamas intensify. Joining me to talk about the latest on the crisis in Gaza and prospects for a truce, Reuben Azar. He's deputy Israeli ambassador to the U.S., Elise Labat of CNN, and Hisham Melam of Al Arabiya News Channel. And throughout the hour, I know many of you will want to weigh in. Give us a call at 800-433-8850. Send an email to drshow@wamu.org. Follow us on Facebook or send us a tweet. Thank you all for being here.
Thanks, Diane. Good to be here.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
And first, joining us by phone from Gaza is Anne Bernard. She's Beirut Bureau Chief for the New York Times. Thanks for joining us, Anne.
Thank you.
Tell us what the latest is on the ground there in Gaza.
Well, there's continuing to be a lot of airstrikes and artillery fire. The ground invasion is still very active in the eastern side of Gaza, which, of course, is a very narrow territory running from north to south. So there's heavy fighting in the east. There's shells falling sometimes even towards the west, and a lot of airstrikes even in downtown Gaza City, which is a place that the Israeli authorities have told people here that it's safer to move to. So it's a very chaotic situation. People aren't sure where to go. And meanwhile, Israel has discovered even more tunnels leading into Israel than they had expected.
Tell me what the latest news is about the missing Israeli soldier.
Well, the Israeli military at first did not confirm or deny the claim by Hamas that they had captured an Israeli soldier. Now they are saying that there is an Israeli missing in Gaza. Probably the delay is due to notification of the family. They say that the person is presumed dead, but that still could be significant because it's very important for Israel to recover all of its soldiers. And in the past, they have traded hundreds or even more prisoners in exchange for a body.
I know that UN Chief Ban Ki-moon and Secretary of State Kerry landed in Cairo on Monday to try to broker a ceasefire. You've got the top Hamas leader in Gaza indicating that a group would not accept an unconditional ceasefire. Do you know what's happening with those talks now?
Well, I think the main point is that neither party is willing to go back to the status quo ante. And here in Gaza, the biggest issue is what they call the siege, the near blockade on Gaza that's been imposed for years by Israel and increasingly by Egypt. They say that the people are suffering from unemployment and from the inability to travel, and that it simply can't go back to the way it was. And interestingly, their condition for a ceasefire is not about Jerusalem or the borders or any of the huge questions in the conflict, but just about primarily about ending this these restrictions on Gaza and also releasing prisoners.
But, of course, there are ongoing worries about these tunnels, ongoing worries about people on both sides dying.
Indeed, and I think the question is, how much longer is this going to go on? Of course, for Israel, they also are under pressure at home to show that they've really done something about the tunnels and about the rocket fire from Gaza.
Anne Bernard, she's Beirut Bureau Chief for the New York Times. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Diane.
And turning to you, Ambassador Azar, what is the aim now of the Israeli ground forces in Gaza?
Thank you, Diane. What the IDF is doing is executing the orders of the cabinet that decided to act in self-defense after having hundreds and now thousands of rockets fired at our population centers in Israel. They are trying to achieve the aim of the government, which is reaching a sustainable ceasefire. As you know, Hamas has rejected the ceasefire initiative of Egypt, and therefore, and after the attacks of the tunnels, not only of the rockets against Israel, the IDF had to go in. And what it's trying to do now is to get rid of these tunnels. We have discovered more than 24 tunnels, attack tunnels, more than 54 shafts, and our IDF are trying to deal with those, destroy those, and they are fighting. They are fighting inside the Gaza Strip against those terrorists.
Tell me how you account for the more than 500 Palestinian dead, and I think it's 27 Israelis at this point who have died.
Well, every loss of life is a tragedy, Diane, and Israel really tried not to engage in this conflict. This was a conflict that was, we had an attack, we were attacked, and we had to respond. Now, in our response, we are being very responsible, unlike Hamas. Hamas is firing rockets to our cities. Then it is hiding their rockets and their tunnels in population centers. And then when we try to warn the population to get away from these places by phone calls, by pamphlets, by text messages, by this method that we have developed of these puppy rockets that we send on roofs, knocking on roofs for people to leave, what the Interior Ministry of Hamas is trying to do is to prevent people from leaving. Officially, that's what they're trying to do. So many of those that have been hurt are a result of them staying in areas in which we asked to evacuate. Now, we have to take into account that out of more than 2,000 counterattacks that we sent to the Gaza Strip, there is a statistical margin of error that is very tragic, and we regret every loss of life. But we have to do here the moral divide. Israel is trying to prevent any loss of civilian life, and we are trying to protect civilian lives in Gaza. We are trying to protect civilian lives in Israel. Hamas is trying to inflict as much damage as possible to civilians in both sides. And this is the challenge that we all have.
Reuven Azari, he's deputy Israeli ambassador to the United States. Hisham Melham, how do you see it from the Palestinian side?
Let's put the situation in context. People talk about Gaza and Israel as if they are two sovereign entities. Gaza is a huge internment camp. Gaza is under siege. Israel controls its skies, its coastline, its border. Egypt and Israel have put a tremendous tight siege on Gaza. When you put people like that, almost 2 million people, in a tiny place, this is the most densely populated piece of land in the world.
I gather it's something like 149 square miles.
Exactly. It's a tiny place, you know. When you put people in such a hellish conditions, they will burrow underground and create tunnels. They will burrow underground. You will, and I will, if we were in that situation. That's why when the Israelis use this silly analogy, it's like Canada bombing Boston and New York. No. It is, in many ways, one could argue legally that Gaza is still under occupation, a form of punishment, collective punishment. And now the Israelis cry morally. The Gazans and Hamas are forcing us to kill their children. Look at the discrepancy in terms of casualties. They are hitting hospitals. I condemned Hamas when they lob missiles indiscriminately. You cannot do that. And Hamas has a moral responsibility to protect the people when they fire a rocket. And now the Israelis say, we are knocking on the Palestinians' doors and asking them to leave. Leave where? Go to the sea? I mean, if there is a country that would accept these people, the Israelis would be happy to push them. And they have a good history of pushing people and doing ethnic cleansing as they've done in 1948. So this moral argument that we have the high moral ground is nonsense. And in that sense, there is an aspect of nihilism on both sides. But at least the Israelis have to recognize that if they keep doing the same thing and expect different results, they are mistaken. If you are a child in Gaza, 6-year-old child, it means that you've seen 3 wars in your little lifetime. And this is the context that is missing in the debate in Israel as well as among Israel's friends in this country.
Hisham Melham, he's Washington Bureau Chief at Al Arabiya News Channel. Elise, what are your expectations for Secretary Kerry and Ban Ki-moon as they attempt to order a truce?
Well, I know that Secretary Kerry wants to get involved and wants to see if he can do some good here. And you heard him on the Sunday talk shows kind of voicing a little frustration that he wants to get out there and start working this. I'm not really clear at this point what he's going to be able to accomplish. You know, Egypt obviously wants to be a broker here, but it's a different Egypt than existed in 2012 when then President Morsi of the Muslim Brotherhood was working with Secretary Clinton. Egypt was very close to Hamas. It had had a lot of influence on Hamas at the time and was willing to give certain concessions to Hamas, such as working with opening the border, that this current Egyptian president, al-Sisi, does not seem to want to give. One of Egypt's, you know, a lot of people think that Egypt wants to crush Hamas right now, and that Egypt and Israel finally have common cause. So what Secretary Kerry will try to do is to urge the Egyptian government to ease the border with Gaza, maybe pay some of the salaries of Hamas workers that they're looking for. But I'm not necessarily clear whether he has a serious role to play in this ceasefire.
Elise Labbitt, Global Affairs Correspondent for CNN. And short break here. When we come back, we'll talk further, take your calls, your email. I look forward to hearing from you. And welcome back. We're talking about the ongoing struggle and battle going on between Hamas in Gaza and the Israelis. Here in the studio with me, Reuven Azar. He's Deputy Israeli Ambassador to the United States. Elise Labbitt, Global Affairs Correspondent with CNN. And Hisham Melhem, he's Washington Bureau Chief at Al Arabiya News Channel. Ambassador, I wonder about the ongoing relationship that Elise just talked about between Egypt and Hamas right now. How do you see that?
Well, I think that Hamas has been now identified not only by Israel, by the United States, by the Europeans, by Canada, by Japan as a terrorist organization. They are also identified by Egypt as a terrorist organization because Hamas has sequestrated the Gaza Strip. They are sequestrated. They have sequestrated the Palestinian people. And I want to remind you that Israel has withdrawn from the Gaza Strip with the hope not to have to go back to the Gaza Strip to patrol the streets. I personally patrolled the streets of Gaza Strip when I was a soldier, and I don't want my daughters and my sons to do that. So we were hoping, we were leaving nurseries behind. We were hoping that the Gazan people will take their destiny on their own hands and they could become Singapore. They don't have to become a prison.
How much of a possibility is there that Israel may return to Gaza on a permanent basis?
Well, we don't want to do that. We are supporting a two-state solution. We don't want to control the lives of the Palestinians. The question is whether the Palestinians are going to have a responsible leadership and not a leadership that just wants, that says that it wants to break the siege, but the only thing that they want to do is have a permission to continue contraband of weapons.
Hisham, how large, how much of the Palestinian population in Gaza supports Hamas and its actions?
Well, Hamas years ago was elected, and in part not because many people subscribe to Hamas's ideology, but because they didn't like the corruption of Fatah and the Palestinian Authority. And there is a lot of corruption, obviously. Palestinians in general are not driven by Islamist impulses, if you will. This has been their historic, tendencies. And I think Hamas can be and should be isolated politically. You have to help those who want, who are seeking a different alternative.
How do you do that?
Well, we had in April an agreement, a reconciliation between Fatah and Hamas, because Hamas was on the ropes. They couldn't even pay the salaries of those people who are doing, basic services.
But now they are far stronger.
I think Israelis, when they attack, the way they attack, they enhance the radicalization of Palestinians.
Do you agree with that, Elise?
I do, but I also think that the United States and the international community and Palestinian President Abbas himself did not give this agreement a chance to really see whether Hamas could be isolated as a result. I mean, the object obviously was to empower Abbas. But in doing that, they gave all the money to Abbas to pay the salaries. He hasn't paid the salaries. And I think that basically,
but the Israelis did not want the salaries to be paid.
Well, okay, and the United States also made sure that the Qataris couldn't pay the salaries by saying that that's against the U.S. law. Diane, I think, and this is goes back to what Hisham was saying in 2006, no, but the international community boycotted Hamas, cut off all the money, never gave Hamas a chance to show whether they could govern, whether they really had the political acumen. And so they always set Hamas up as the offended party to continue the resistance. Perhaps if Hamas was given a chance, to be in the government now, then it would show that it was not worthy and would not be reelected, and that would further empower the moderates.
Ambassador Azar.
This is completely ridiculous. People think that you can appease Hamas by sending them money. The only thing that Hamas will do with the money is to invest more in arming themselves and in attacking Israel. And they have proved that again and again. I want to remind Hisham, he said that Hamas was elected. I'm sorry, Hamas had a violent takeover of the Gaza Strip, and the same neighborhood in which we are fighting now in Sajaiya is a neighborhood in which the Hilas family, the Hilas clan, the Fatah clan, were exterminated by Hamas. They were thrown from rooftops, and they were shot hundreds of bullets in their kneecaps. That's the way Hamas took over Gaza. And we have to understand we are dealing here with an extremist movement that is sequestrating the population. And there is no support today in the population for Hamas. There is a decrease in support. Now, this pact that they have signed, if this pact was about peace, that would be okay. And it's even not reconciliation, because they haven't agreed to put all these terrorists in the Gaza Strip under the control of the PLO.
Elise.
Well, some people, including former National Security Advisor Zbigniew Brzezinski, who is on many talk shows, including CNN in recent weeks, feels that this agreement should have been an opportunity, that by, in effect, joining this national unity government, that although Hamas was never going to give some kind of public recognition of the State of Israel or say that it supported peace, but that was a tacit approval of what President Abbas was trying to do with the peace process. Now, that was never – that thesis was never given a chance to be tested. We don't know. And so by continuing to set up Hamas to continue the resistance, I think you really need to politically isolate Hamas in addition to militarily doing it, because militarily is never going to work.
And that's what Egypt
after the agreement.
Hold on. Hisham, you were recently in Qatar and the United Arab Emirates. Talk about what they're doing and how they see what's going on here.
But briefly, let me say, there was an agreement to establish a cabinet, and they established a cabinet. Not a single minister was from Hamas. Hamas was isolated, and the United States and the international community and Israel could have allowed money to be paid to those civil servants there, not through Hamas, but through the UN or through the PA. There are many ways of doing this, but the Israelis don't want a reconciliation among the Palestinians. They will be happy if Hamas just cowered down in Gaza and maintained this
but
division among the Palestinians.
And
they're not going to do that, and you know that. And in 2 years from now, unfortunately, you and I will probably be talking about the same issue.
Let me talk about Qatar.
Qatar is the little city-state that could or tries to do something that is much bigger than its size. They like to punch above their weight. And they have had a very negative influence throughout the region. They have helped the radical Islamists in Syria. They have helped Hamas. They have helped Hezbollah in the past. This is a tiny country that has tons of money, and they believe that by throwing their money around, they can play a regional power. And they please the Americans by paying $1 billion to refurbish two air bases, and at the same time they used to maintain relationship with Saddam Hussein and the Iranians and Hamas and Hezbollah and all. They play these games, and now they are competing with the big heavyweight Egypt. The problem is that, as Ali said, you have a different government in Egypt that hates the Islamists, and they staged the coup against the Muslim Brotherhood, which they consider Hamas to be one of their offshoots.
So we have now
this competition between Egypt and Gaza, and the Palestinians are paying for it.
I think I agree with Hisham that the Qataris are playing a very negative role. They are supporting Hamas. Actually, as we speak, Al Jazeera is a propaganda tool of Hamas and is promoting more activity of Hamas on the ground. Now, I want to make it clear: Israel is not against Palestinian unity. We are for a Palestinian responsible government. We would like Hamas to disarm. We would like Hamas to be part of a political process. The international community, the quartet, has presented three requirements for Hamas to become a legitimate player. But if somebody thinks that by playing several salaries, Israel is not against assistance of the Palestinians, we are facilitating assistance to the Gaza Strip again and again. Actually, we are the only ones now sending medicaments and food and fuel into the Gaza Strip, and we are being attacked as we try to do that, because Hamas doesn't care about the population. They want to see as much civilian victims as they can in order to create an international crisis.
Is that how you, in your reporting on what's happening there, is that how you see it?
Well, I think that the ambassador is right in some respects, that Israel does take care to avoid civilians. I think that
of course, the four young boys on the beach.
Well, look, Diane, Israel has a lot of precision weapons, and we've seen that over the past, that, you know, they really can be very precise. And so I think that the worry of many Israelis is why there have been so many accidents. It is true that on the other side of the border, Israel is opening up a field hospital. I think that on the Palestinian unity question, I think that why don't we see President Abbas doing more? I mean, everybody talks about that Israel doesn't want unity. I think that President Abbas has really not helped himself in terms of, you know, it's difficult for him politically, but he's not really speaking out too much about what Hamas is doing, really trying to be more, you know, it's difficult for him. And I think on the Qatar question, this is what we're seeing playing out in the region right now, is that there's a kind of divide between countries like Qatar and Egypt. Qatar and Turkey are supporting the Islamists. The Egyptians, you know, obviously are against the Muslim Brotherhood, and that's part of a greater Islamist strath. So I think that, you know, this Palestinian question, while it used to be very localized to Israel and the Palestinians with a lot of Arab outrage, now you see regional rivalries and ideologies playing out.
Ambassador.
I want to remind the audience that the Palestinian question was always regionalized by different players, and especially now when you have a merely war of civilizations going on in the Middle East, and we are facing all these various kinds of extremist groups, we have to think together, the international community, how to cope with that, how to isolate Hamas, how to impede a situation in which there are players like Qatar that are trying to support it and engage them in a positive way in order to create stability in our region.
Suppose Israel cannot succeed in closing every single one of those tunnels. Does that mean the war will continue?
Well, right now the IDF has a mission. That mission is to destroy those tunnels. That's what we are doing. We are not rejecting any initiative for ceasefire. We are willing to go for ceasefire immediately, as we were at the beginning. And I hope that the efforts that Secretary Kerry, together with the Egyptians, together with those forces, really wants to achieve a constructive ceasefire and to impede the continuation of contraband of weapons to the Gaza Strip will succeed.
Look, we are reducing a historic conflict that involves two people and conflict over territory and identity to a bunch of tunnels. We are losing sight of the real issue. We have almost 2 million people in Gaza, and their fate hangs in the balance. And I don't care about the regional machinations of Qatar and Egypt or Israel or whatever. We're talking about a human tragedy that's unfolding in Gaza. And then the Israelis tell us, oh, we build the hospital so that the wounded that we are, you know, causing, 600 people died. And then the Israelis tell us, you know, you have to understand our moral anguish. Anguish. This is really nonsense. We have to focus on the real issue. And if we are not going to solve the underlying political issue, we're going to revisit this conflict again and again. And this is what is lost in the debate.
And you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. If Hamas is saying they will not come back to the table until all these conditions are met, Hisham, demands like lifting restrictions on fishing, farming, import.
What's wrong with that?
Well, but what I'm saying is that they're laying down all these conditions first. How do you get to the table to really negotiate a ceasefire
because if you just accept a ceasefire, return to the
but
status quo.
But wouldn't that stop killing
of
people?
Of course, yeah. But then you have to have some sort of a framework. You know, why are we having a ceasefire? Just to have a ceasefire as an end in itself? No.
So we need to have continuing.
No, wait a minute. You are continuing it, not me. We have to talk about the underlying political issues. Even this is what John Kerry is talking about. And when even John Kerry, by the way, just as an aside, was mocking the Israelis when they talk about pinpoint attacks. They don't care about civilian lives. Let's put that out on the table. The point is, we have to deal with those people and treat those people humanely. If you want to undermine Hamas, as I would like to. You know, and also, and I will say to my friend Elise, you cannot expect Mahmoud Abbas, who is a weak leader, I agree, to attack Hamas or the leadership now in Gaza at a time when the Israelis are killing Palestinians. There are real issues, immediate issues.
Elise.
I think that President Abbas has used his weakness as a strength for many years, not just in this conflict,
sure,
but across the whole time. I do agree with you, though, that the underlying core of this whole issue of every conflict that we've seen over the last several years is, the Israeli occupation of the Palestinian territory. And you've got these 2 million Palestinians who are not becoming Israeli citizens. There's no chance that they're going to get their own state anytime soon. So essentially, you have this kind of series of potential, you know, time bombs waiting to happen. And if there's not some solution to resolve the underlying issues of the conflict, we're going to keep having this thing. I think that what's going to happen, there's going to be a ceasefire in a couple of weeks with a lot of dead Israelis, sure, and a lot of dead Palestinians. Everyone is going to be very tired and they're going to give up and there's going to be a ceasefire, but we're not going to address the underlying causes
of
the
conflict.
Is
that what you expect, Minister and Ambassador?
If you are very tired or not, we don't have any choice but to fight those extremists, because those extremists are not interested in a peace process. We want to go back to the peace negotiations. We want to go back to resolve this peacefully. We have left the Gaza Strip to the 67 border. And what happened? What happened? Did we get peace? So if you want to convince Israelis it is worthy to give back territory for peace, you have to show them that on the other side you will have a functioning government. Because today, if we continue this withdrawal, what will happen? You will have ISIS in the Judean Samaria and the West Bank towns. Is that what we want? Do we want Hamas in the West Bank? So we have to isolate the extremists. And as much as we do it together, we are going to succeed. So what I ask, what I require, and I think that the government of Israel requires, is the cooperation of the international community with the Egyptians, with us, with other players, to isolate Hamas and to create terms in the Gaza Strip in which you will have their sustainable quiet and support for the Palestinian people. Is that what we want? We want the Palestinian population is being sequestered by Hamas. This is what people don't understand.
I
if we don't fight Hamas, there will continue.
I agree with that. I agree with isolating Hamas, and I think Hisham does too. But I don't think anybody has put forward a kind of roadmap on how to do that. It's not going to be done militarily. How do you isolate them politically without trying to engage? Here's a question that I've had. When you look at the negotiations over Gilad Shalit, Israel paid a very heavy price. Yes, you paid 1,000 Palestinian prisoners for Gilad Shalit, but you were able to come to some kind of accommodation because you had common goals. Why can't something like that
because
be done now?
To accommodate Hamas means to annihilate the state of Israel. That's what they want to achieve.
A short break here, and when we come back, time to open the phones for your questions, comments. Stay with us.
National broadcast of the Diane Rehm Show is made possible in part by the Kiplinger Foundation, supporting public understanding of business and the economy. By Lumosity.com, personalized brain training developed by neuroscientists to challenge memory and problem-solving through games. Lumosity.com. By the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, working to build a culture of health for all Americans. On the web at rwjf.org. And by Joyce V. Hale, in the interest of engaging an informed and civil electorate. This is NPR.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, classical music today and tomorrow, its place in American culture, financial health of its institutions, and new efforts to make it more accessible to younger generations. The Diane Rehm Show. Next hour. And welcome back. As we talk about the ongoing struggle, the hundreds of people being killed in the ongoing ammunition going back and forth between Israel and Gaza. Let's go to Isa in Windsor Mill, Maryland. Hi, you're on the air.
Well, thank you. I think I want to start by mentioning that Nelson Mandela said that the Palestinians are going through a worse apartheid than the South Africans were. After seeing Gaza, David Cameron called it an open-air prison. So what we have today is, and to put things into context, is that the prisoners of Auschwitz of today, which is Gaza, are rebelling against the Nazi prison guards. And we are here condemning them. We're condemning innocent blood. Because it's easy to do so. Not one person on the panel says or has the guts to say, yeah, I'll represent Hamas. How can we have an open debate when everybody on the panel agrees that they're anti-Hamas?
All right. Thanks for your call. Mr. Ambassador, an apartheid situation in Gaza.
Well, I think it's ridiculous. Israel has withdrawn from Gaza Strip, and we wanted Gaza to be free. But unfortunately, what happened is that Gaza is being utilized as a tool for becoming a basis of Iran, a basis of attacks against Israel, And that's the last thing we want to see. And I told the audience before that, you know, we wouldn't like Israel to come back to the Gaza Strip. We want to stay out of the Gaza Strip. We want to give the population of Gaza Strip freedom. But the question is whether they are going to have a leadership that is going to concentrate in building a future for Gaza instead of using the cement and concrete they are importing in order to build tunnels, instead of building schools and nurseries.
All right, let's go to Farmington Hills, Michigan. Roberta, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I'm a little concerned, very concerned, that I hear this compassionate talk about the people in Gaza, the Palestinian people. And in the whole conversation, no one's addressing, well, getting to, I like the speakers who were talking about putting things in context. These people are in an open-air prison, and yet they're being punished because they've got an inside enemy, and then they've got Israel fighting them. They have no hope of ever getting out of this situation. And
do you agree with that, Hisha?
Look, I opposed Hamas ideologically and politically. I do believe in a two-state solution. And I think if you just put things in context, John Kerry and Martin Indyk spent 9 months working with the Palestinians and the Israelis and the Egyptians and others. And then in the end, they failed. And most of the blame were put by them on the Israelis because of the settlement activities. So now you are working in the West Bank, for instance, and we cannot divide the West Bank from Gaza. This is the same struggle for the same patrimony, Palestinian patrimony, right? The Israelis always talk, our existence is in danger. But I would like to turn the argument upside down. The existence of the Palestinians as a nation is also in danger. I don't like comparisons. I don't like to bring up Nazism to this discussion. This is unacceptable because these comparisons really make you lose sight of what's the real thing. And I don't want to even bring apartheid here. But I have to bring, there's an inhumane conditions under which the Palestinians in Gaza are living, and it's mostly because of Israel and the settlement activities. You cannot expect people to negotiate with you in good faith when you are pulling the ground from under.
All right. Here's what I want to understand. What tools does the United States have to bring about not only a ceasefire, but some relaxation of what's happening to the people in Gaza? Is it money?
I don't think it's money, because there are, you know, look, Qatar, for instance, is willing to give money. I mean, I think that they could ease
but
some of that.
What about the aid to Israel?
Look, I think Iron Dome has really helped Israel, ward off some of these rocket attacks. Look, nobody denies the fact that Israeli citizens are also under siege, having to run in to bomb shelters at a moment's notice against these rockets. Look, the United States could provide security guarantees. It can put pressure on all the parties. It could put pressure on Israel to relax some of the restrictions on the Gaza border if Israel's security needs are taken into account. I think what you're seeing from the United States here, inevitably in every conflict with Israel, the kind of long-held U.S. position that Israel has a right to defend itself rubs up against the growing concern about the loss of civilian life. So clearly John Kerry wants to go out and try and do something, but if both parties don't want to end this, or if they don't want to improve the situation on the ground, I'm not sure if John Kerry's, you know, obvious dogged determination is going to be enough this
All
time.
All right, to Richard in Haverhill, Massachusetts, you're on the air.
Yes, thank you, Diane. The Palestinians have been under occupation for almost 50 years. They're more like colonial subjects. And let's review what's gone on for the last 50 years, what the conditions they've had to live under. There have been homes bulldozed, olive groves destroyed. There's been settlements in the West Bank, more and more settlements being built. They're trying to build out settlements in East Jerusalem, and that's where the Palestinians hope to have their capital if there's ever a two-state solution. So the status quo can't stay the way it is. And if Israel doesn't come to some sort of agreement with the Palestinians and allow them more freedom, I wish, but it won't happen, that we should have sanctions and boycott Israel like we're doing with Russia.
Mr. Ambassador.
I want to put things in context. First of all, we have to take into account that also we have a generation of Israelis, mainly around Gaza, that are their childhood is passing through continuous attacks from the Gaza Strip. Number two, we want a two-state solution. The problem is we started with the Oslo process more than 20 years ago, and we wanted to give a chance to Palestinians to build their institutions. And what is the result? The result is that we are at the verge, if we would have withdrawn, we're at the verge of creating another dysfunctional Palestinian state that, like Syria, like Iraq, like other dysfunctional Arab countries, is full with extremist forces, with terrorists, and we would have to be obliged again and again to deal with those. So what we need is a responsible and functional government.
But aren't you going to be obliged to deal with this situation again and again
exactly.
and again?
Therefore, we need the support when it comes to the diplomatic course. We need the support of the international community to help Palestinians to create responsible, non-corrupt, non-violent institutions to secure the future of the Palestinian people. And believe me, Israel withdrew. We have peace agreements with Egypt. We have a peace agreement with Jordan. We will not hesitate to have a peace agreement with the Palestinians when we believe there is a chance for a sustainable Palestinian state that is peaceful now on the issue that was raised of the settlements. We haven't expanded the territory of the settlements. We are talking about a few hundred houses that have been, or thousands of that have been within Israeli neighborhoods in Jerusalem. This is not an impediment for the peace process. It is being used as an excuse.
It is the biggest
impediment. It is being used as an excuse.
Hold on.
You are colonizing somebody else's
hold
land.
Hold on, Hisham.
Jerusalem, we won't enter. Jerusalem is the capital of Israel.
I'm going to give Jerusalem.
You the center of the Jewish people for the last 3,000 years. We have to understand here that we can compromise. We have compromised in the past. We are willing to compromise in the future. We need a responsible and functional Palestinian leadership.
All right, Hisham.
Listen, they have been incorporating, stealing Palestinian lands from the beginning. From the beginning, they never wanted to have a Palestinian independent state. From Oslo or before Oslo, from the minute they took over the West Bank, everything, Israel was born by the arms, by force, and by expelling Palestinians from their native lands. Here you have in the Israeli government, officials, members of government, ministers who came born in Soviet Russia, and they brought with them the sickness of that Soviet culture, political culture. They come and tell the Palestinians where they should go and what they should have. And the Palestinians can trace their history there for hundreds of years. We're talking about the denial of Palestinian nationhood. And they have been stealing the land, colonizing the land, and they expect those who are occupied to provide security to the occupier. No. If there is anything surreal in the world, is that when you occupy somebody and you expect that occupied to give you security before they move. How can they build a viable state under occupation? Occupation can be maintained only by a system of coercion. Coercion, nothing else.
All right, I'm going back to the phones to Miami, Florida. Hi there, Bobby.
How are you doing? You know, I was hearing what the ambassador was saying. You know, both groups seem to be have the issue. Hamas continues to attack and kill, and Israeli continues to expand these settlements, and to the point where Europeans, as I read, are boycotting some of the products that are coming out of these settlements that are causing these problems. Also, Mr. Ambassador, could you answer the question? Could you define what is a pinpoint or precision of shelling? Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, I will do that. Israel has mapped the Gaza Strip, and we are trying to target those rockets and those threats that emanate from the Gaza Strip. And we try to do it with extreme care. Now, you have to take into account that we are, before we are doing the strikes, we're trying to warn the population in numerous ways, which I explained. Sending text messages, phone calls, sending pamphlets from the air.
But what evidence do you have, Mr. Ambassador, that Hamas is putting civilians out there deliberately as targets?
Because we have seen publicly the calls of Sami Abu Zuhri, the spokesperson of Hamas. We have seen the official announcements of the Ministry of Interior, of the government of Hamas,
saying,
calling the people not to move and actually encouraging them actively to mount rooftops in order to prevent with human shields.
Elise, I'd like your comments on that.
Well, look, there is no denying that Hamas does put weapons caches in the residential homes, sometimes in ambulances, sometimes in hospitals, and kind of
in
creates...
hospitals? I mean, I mean, I'd like to see a picture.
They've been found.
No, I'd like to see a picture.
You know,
Netanyahu comes
Hamas
and says publicly they are putting missiles next to us.
But let me finish.
And his artillery is firing on hospitals.
Ask UNRWA. UNRWA has said that Hamas has done that.
Let me finish. There has been evidence that Hamas has basically tried to put weapons in residential homes and other places. Whether they have said to the Palestinians, you know, go be a martyr and be a human shield, or kind of ordered them, I don't necessarily.
I will send you emails.
I did not see that. Look, there was an incident, and that should be condemnable, where they put rockets in a school, and UNRWA discovered that.
This is the tip of the iceberg.
I mean, you know, please don't trap yourself with morality. It doesn't work here. That should be condemned, obviously. The point is, the Israelis tell the Palestinians to leave. Leave where? Give me an answer. Leave where? This place is
Exactly where to evacuate beyond a certain road, Salahuddin Road,
I'll ask
Shajaiya.
You to leave your home, Diane, so that I will bomb your home to smithereen. I mean, yes. This is what they do.
If terrorists are in your home, what are you going to do?
If they caught a Palestinian doing something illegal, right? Let's say, okay, you punish the whole family. You destroy the whole house.
So should we invade the Gaza Strip in order to take care of Hamas?
This is the worst kind of occupation. That's the occupation that they want us to, that they want the Palestinians to appreciate.
Hamas is the problem.
And you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show, and surely our listeners can discern from the difficulties we're having here with this conversation how difficult it must be to bring all parties together to try to talk about this in a rational way.
I think there are so many entrenched positions on both sides, and I think that's been one of the problems of Secretary Kerry in these 9 months. That he really made, you know, really strong efforts going back and forth between the parties. But what he said is, if the parties don't want to make the necessary compromises themselves, you know, this is really going to be what happened. And I think this conflict and the one that we saw 2 years ago and the one 2008, the root of it is the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. And I think until there's some type of political resolution where the Palestinians have their own state, we're destined to repeat this.
All right. The root of it is occupation.
Finally, to Amir in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. You're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call. Sure. I just want to have a comment and also a question to the Palestinian gentleman. My comment is also, I just want everybody to remember that when Israel withdrew from southern Lebanon in 2000, that now we have 150,000 rockets aiming towards Israel. I also have a question for the Palestinian gentleman. How does building tunnels and find, you know, obviously cost hundreds of millions of dollars to build this elaborate tunnel system and these thousands, if not tens of thousands of rockets, how does that help the Palestinian cause?
We had an email to the same effect. Why not spend the money on the Palestinians themselves?
Let's talk about context. The Israelis withdrew without an agreement. They imposed the siege. They control the shoreline. They control the space. They control the borders and everything. These people, as I said, they live in a huge internment camp. I don't want to call it more than that. When you put people in these conditions, they are going to burrow underground and build tunnels. And most of these tunnels are for smuggling, for economic reasons. And yes, they are
used now. Those are the tunnels for Egypt.
And when you impose a siege on them, and when they expect that you would be hit, they are going to hit the Israelis too. This is a situation of war. Unless you address the underlying political issue, which is occupation and siege and dehumanization of a whole population, we are not going to end this conflict.
How long do you expect this siege to continue, Elise?
I think it's going to go on for another couple of weeks. I don't think... I'll let the ambassador say, but I don't think that Israel is ready necessarily to stop. The prime minister has said quiet for quiet at great political cost, but I don't know if that's – I think that there are some larger aims to degrade Hamas's capability. I think on the Palestinian side, I just think when people are weary of this conflict, there'll be some kind of ceasefire, and that'll be temporary.
Do you believe, Hisham, that Hamas will in fact get some of the concessions that it's asking for?
I think in the end they will have to get something that will alleviate the suffering of the people. And I think if we have wise leadership in the international community or in Israel or in Egypt or in Washington, they should address the plight of the Palestinians and try to isolate Hamas politically.
All right. And yes. Mr. Ambassador, last
word. I agree we have to isolate Hamas, and we have to do an effort together that this ceasefire, when it arrives, will be sustainable. If that means putting some relief on the Palestinian people, we support that. But we have to impede Hamas from rearming and to the militarize the Gaza Strip.
Reuven Azar, he's deputy Israeli ambassador to the U.S. Elise Labbitt, global affairs correspondent with CNN. Hisham Malam of Al Arabiya News Channel. Let us hope and pray that this conflict comes to an end soon. Thank you all
Amen.
For
Thank
being
you.
Here. Thanks for listening, all. I'm Diane Rehm.
The Diane Rehm Show is produced by Sandra Pinkert, Denise Couture, Susan Casey, Rebecca Kaufman, Lisa Dunn, Danielle Knight, Allison Brody, and Alexandra Boti. The engineer is Timothy Olmsted. Natalie Yurblifker answers the phones.
Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and from Athena Health.